Today's guest is a big voice in Tollywood industry. If you watch Telugu movies and you like reading reviews, then you have definitely read Heyman's reviews. Directors, actors and producers alike look forward to his reviews of their movies. He has 72,400 followers on Twitter as of today. That's how famous he is in the industry. Despite all this, he's so down to earth and nice and warm. He writes reviews for Telugu movies, but watches and has interest in all international movies. His journey from mechanical engineering to film critiquing is not as dreamy as one would imagine. He had his fair share of struggles. A crazy movie buff, an intelligent film critique, and a good friend. Please welcome Hemant. Hey, hi Hemant, and thanks for joining us today. Welcome.
Hi Madhav, it's a great pleasure to be on your show. Thank you so much. It feels very weird to be on the other side, you know, because usually I'm interviewing people, but yeah, let's give it a shot.
Well, let me interview you today then. So, tell us more about yourself. You've done bachelor's in mechanical engineering from BITS Pilani and then film critique journalist. So what made you do that and why and how? How was it? The transition.
Long story.
Go ahead. We have time.
To put it in film terms, there is a flashback to every story. So my flashback started in 2001. That was the year when I was in my 11th standard. And the only thing which people told me back then was, if you can't crack MCET or IITs, then you have to go to BITS Pilani. Because they take your 12th marks into consideration, and if you're a state rank holder, then you can get into BITS. So that became my sole intention. I wanted to go to BITS.
Mm-hmm.
And like every other Telugu guy, girl out there, I was also a movie buff. I used to watch a lot of films. It was our summer ritual, Sankranti ritual, to watch as many films as possible.
Right.
After going to BITS, this was 2003, August. Within the first month, I understood that I'm not up to the mark. You know, I mean, a lot of kids who joined with me were of much, I mean, their intelligence levels were so high that I was like, how will I even get here, you know, and how can I even compete with these guys? The good thing about BITS Pilani back then was, on the day of our induction, the vice chancellor tells us, you're 18 years old, you're all 18 years old, so you're adults now, and we mm-hmm. believe that you have the freedom to choose what you want from your life. And if you study well, that's great for you. It'll open a lot of doors for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't study well, then good luck with whatever you want to do, and we hope you do well in life.
That's a very nice thing to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very open-ended statement, and I didn't know what to make out of it.
Right.
And then I became a perennial five-pointer from my second semester onwards. A big disaster, man. I mean, honestly, once you go to BITS, the thought of dropping out of college doesn't come to you. I love the campus. I love my life there.
Mm-hmm.
And helped me grow. It helped me discover what all I could have done. Like,
right.
For the first time in my life, I came to know that some of the colleges in Delhi were amazing. You know, there's St. Stephen's, there's
Delhi University.
Delhi University, which are really renowned for their management economics.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I'm like, why didn't I know about all this? You know, instead of an engineering college, maybe I would have gone to economics. But then nobody tells you that, right? Like you have an option of doing economics right after your 12th.
Especially in Andhra, Telangana.
Yeah.
The rush is for only IIT, BITS Pilani.
Yeah, you're either an engineer
or a
doctor.
So,
anyway, I mean, the turning point there was, the twist in the tale there was in my third year. I was watching a lot of movies by then, but one of my friends, he went to IIT Kanpur. And
mm-hmm.
when he came back with a 250 GB hard disk full of foreign films.
Right.
Because I was a very close friend, he gave me a special privilege, like I could just watch his movies.
Uh-huh.
For the first time in my life, I started watching films which I didn't understand. Like, I didn't know what to make out of them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking, because all my life I've been watching films and I've had fun, I've laughed, I've cried.
Right.
But how do you not understand a film? You know,
correct.
That's a big puzzle for anybody. And slowly I discovered that, that interest evolved so much that I wanted to know more about film studies, filmmaking. So that led me to the discovery of film studies as a subject itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to understand what does it take to be a film student, you know.
Right.
Obviously, you could go to a film school, but then you can't do that until the end of your engineering degree, you know.
Correct.
So in my final semester on campus, we could take a lot of electives. And one of my electives was something called SCALCI in WITS.
Mm-hmm.
It stands for Critical Analysis of Literature and Cinema. So that was
the closest.
That's hands down my favorite course that I've done in those 8 semesters on campus. Looking back, I regret not going to the literature classes, but I would not miss a single cinema course. So Geeta B, she was our teacher there.
And right.
She introduced me to a lot of filmmakers, foreign filmmakers, and there was one film by a filmmaker named Andrei Tarkovsky, very, very well-known Russian filmmaker,
yes,
living in Italy. And I saw a film called Nostalgia, and I slept off for the first time, you know. I'm like, what is there in this film to for it to be so renowned and all that?
Right.
And then I discussed about that film with a couple of other some of my friends there, and they gave me a very different perspective. And that sort of opened up a lot of things for me, you know. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is how you interpret a film. So this is how you see the philosophical side of what the character wants to say or what the
right.
director wants to say. And,
mm-hmm.
and in my final exam of that course, I was asked to describe that film. And by then I'd read a lot about that film, about different perspectives. And my teacher, Geeta B ma'am, she was so impressed that she wrote good on my answer sheet. And I really had tears in my eyes because in 4 years, nobody had praised me for my work. And for almost 4 or 5 years after college, I kept that answer sheet with me, saying that,
wow,
this is so dear to me. Thank you so much.
Are you a YouTuber? Do you like to know what your followers are saying about you? What is the general sentiment? Do you want to filter out the negatives or see less of it and see what positives people are talking about your video? My friends have started this website called www.chemical.ai, an artificial intelligence-based web application that sorts out all the comments in one place without you having to go through the list under your videos. Even if you're a fan or a media house or just a passerby and want to know what are people saying about that video, go to YouTube, copy-paste the link of the video of your choice, open www.chemical.ai and paste it in the box and hit the go button. Enjoy the sentiment tracking, comments of viewers at your fingertips. It's www.chemical.ai.
Anyway, I mean, after college, all I knew was I loved movies, man. Like,
mm-hmm.
there was nothing else. Like, there were no other aspirations. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was really bad at my academics, so I didn't know if I had a career in IT or my mechanical engineering thing. And I had to be very careful if I had to choose my master's because,
mm-hmm. right.
honestly, you can do whatever you want in your bachelor's, but your master's is a very
where you start
big thing, yeah.
narrowing just
yeah.
out of time,
and
right?
I didn't want to do my master's in mechanical engineering because I didn't know anything until then, you know, and it didn't make sense for me to continue that in master's level also.
Right.
So I told my parents that I wanted to do my MBA
mm-hmm.
Or at least work in an advertising firm or something to do with economics, finance, and
right.
and they said no, because by then I had a job with Satyam Computers, and they said it's a great company, you should go ahead and work.
Right.
I did that. Like, I joined.
At that time, it was a great company.
At that time. So, this I'm talking in 2007. I joined Satyam. 3 months into the training, I really liked it. I enjoyed understanding basic Java.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went to advanced Java, Struts, Hibernate, Spring. I'm like, what is this one? Like, I didn't get a hang of it, honestly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened after the initial training program was we were put on bench for a year
okay.
because there were no projects and we were just waiting there hoping that something would happen.
Around that's when the Satyam problem started?
Not that happened the year after that. So I'm talking about 2008.
Right. Okay.
all I did was I would go to the company and the office and would read about movies, you know, open Wikipedia, and it's a rabbit hole, man. Like Wikipedia, once you click on a link, and that leads you to 100 other links.
100 other links.
And that's when I discovered somebody whom I've considered to be one of my biggest inspirations till date. So for every film, in the critical reception section, they would quote a review of Roger Ebert.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know who this Roger Ebert was. I mean, frankly, I was not aware of a lot of things which are happening in world cinema or even in Hollywood beyond what we see on screen. Right?
Correct.
I started reading a lot about Roger Ebert. I started following his blog.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing stuff. You know, I mean, the obsession came to a level where I would go watch a film and come back to read what Roger Ebert had written about that film. You know, and that's how I started expressing myself through reviews.
Mm-hmm.
My reviews started because I liked movies. It's not the other way around.
Right.
I'm not a writer per se. You know, I'm a movie lover, movie buff.
Correct, movie buff.
So yeah. I wanted to tell my friends to go watch this film, but I have to explain to them why. So that's how I got into writing. You know, so and the blog, I was very regular with writing that blog. You know.
Right, right.
Back then it was called, I don't know, it was called Hemanthology.
Hemanthology.
Yeah.
Right.
That went on for a while. And 2009, of course, January, Satyam scandal happened and we all knew that we were going to be kicked out of our company soon. And I was very thankful that that was happening because...
it gave me an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I was losing my job, but then I knew that I was not going to go back to another IT company ever in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what I could do. So one day I went on my blog and posted a stick note saying, hire me, I'm up for freelancing. And by then a lot of people were reading my blog. I think the word sort of spread around. So
right.
This gentleman named Vamshi from 123telugu.com, he approached me saying, hey, do you want to write for us? And yeah, that's how I became a film reviewer slash film journalist. It started with a very small website. Back then, I think they had launched a year ago, so it was not a very, very popular website. So, but that became my training ground. I started going out into the field, like the press meets and interviews and all that stuff. And soon I moved to a magazine, which was called South Scope. And then a tabloid happened, Post Noon. And then eventually I joined Times of India. This was 2013. Yeah, it was around that phase.
Right.
And 2015, I quit that company. I joined another digital media company in Hyderabad.
Mm-hmm.
And 2017 is when I started freelancing. Like, I do a lot of stuff related to Telugu cinema for websites and media houses which are not based in Hyderabad.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's my story.
Wow.
A very long flashback, but I hope I've covered everything that I wanted to say.
No, I mean, during the interview, you can add in whenever you want to, whatever you want to. You're free, more than free to happy add it. But so you've had an amazing journey, like you just discussed, and you had this, you started writing, and then you started slowly interviewing, and then you had video interviews. And how and why did you start to, you know, shift, or you were you trying to experiment, or what made you go through interviews? And
that was really not my idea per se, right? So this company 123telugu.com, third day into my job, I get a call saying, Hemant, you have to do a couple of interviews, so just be ready. I said, oh, okay, so whom am I interviewing? They said, you're going to interview Junior NTR and Rajmouli. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm a huge fan of Rajmouli, and Magadira had released earlier that year, and it was such a big deal for me, and I've been a big fan of NTR's work. So for a couple of days, I sat down, wrote everything I thought I would ask them. Unfortunately, the interview with NTR didn't happen because it was too busy. But with Rajmouli... Okay. So he had come as a judge for a dance reality show. This was being shot at Ramoji Film City. And I didn't know the precise time when he would be there. So I went to RFC at 7 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
And once I reached there, they told me that he was going to come only in the evening. I'm like, what am I supposed to do, right?
Full day.
So, full day, I just sat and read Sea of Poppies. It's a book by Amitabh Ghosh, amazing book.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks to him, I finished that book, you know. So, evening, he comes and he goes to judge the show. It's a one-hour-long program, and I'm growing restless because I really wanted to meet him. And
right.
And finally, I showed my face, and they said, yes, you can go interview him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by far the worst interview I've ever done in my life. Okay, I mean, I was a rookie. I didn't know anything.
Right, right, of course.
So every question that I would ask him, I call him Sir, Rajmali Sir would say,
mm-hmm.
But I've answered this hundreds of times, you know, but anyway, I'll answer you again. I felt, I just wanted to kill myself. Man. Like I just had one big opportunity and I just blew it. But then he was very kind, gracious enough to talk to me for 10, 15 minutes and
mm-hmm.
such a memorable day for me. But throughout my journey, it's been 10 years since I've turned a film journalist. It's mostly been writing, you know.
Right.
I never really thought about doing video per se.
Mm-hmm.
I never worked in a TV channel. I think that's the only media sector that I've not worked in. I've written for magazines, I've written for websites, newspapers, tablets, but never a TV channel.
Right.
It's a different art, you know, not everybody is suited for it. And I discovered that much later. So there was this digital media company which I was working, which had just joined in 2015. And I bounced off the idea, let's do video interviews, you know, what's the harm?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yeah, we are open to the idea. And we started doing video interviews. My approach was, I'm going to talk to this celebrity the same way I talk to them while doing a print interview.
Mm-hmm.
And there is going to be a camera, like whatever, two camera setup. And I'm not going to look at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only going to focus on the celebrity and talk to that person. But that's not how it works. You know, I mean, TV interviews by itself is a performance art. You know,
correct.
The way you move your hands, the way you shake your head. Everything matters and everything gets amplified when people watch it in different devices.
Right.
And I was not really aware of it for a while. And even when people try to tell me how to, like, to cover up my flaws, like, for instance, after doing what, about 80, 90 interviews,
wow.
I still know that I move my hands too much
mm-hmm.
on camera and it's very distracting for people.
Correct.
Even if
yeah.
they're watching you for that very brief period of time when you're asking a question, you know?
Right.
But I can't help it, no. I can't keep my hands stiff and ask them this question with confidence. And a lot of people relate voice with confidence or your posture with confidence.
Correct, correct.
But my point of view was that I'm being very attentive. You know, I'm listening to whatever that person says. So, and it doesn't really look good on camera. I mean, I understand that, but
mm-hmm.
I couldn't stop that natural flow, right?
Right.
So, it became an addiction after a point because you know that the other person is also enjoying the conversation. So,
mm-hmm.
you just keep doing it week after week. And after being in the industry for 10 years, so a lot more actors know you. So, they would want
correct.
To talk to you. And
right.
getting an interview becomes easier. But given a choice, I would still say I'll write the interview and not do a video interview. Although I'm very proud of some of the video interviews that I've done. You know? So.
Nice. That's really good. You said 10 years. 10 years since Satyam had shut down. But you've been writing film reviews since 2007.
Yeah.
About time when we actually met. Right.
right?
And I used to read... back then, whenever I was back from ships, I used to read this thing, and we used to go for movies, and we used to sit like for hours together in a coffee shop, doing nothing but talk about movies and what is our plan ahead. And I cannot forget those days. So it's such a long journey. And do you right now? Do you feel accomplished? Do you feel you have done what you've always wanted, and is that fire still burning inside?
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. Like, see, when you get into something like arts or humanities, there is no end to what you're expected to do or what you want to do.
Absolutely.
For me, the biggest blessing has been being at the right time at the right place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, let's say if I had not started my career in 2009,
mm-hmm.
and I'd started maybe 5 years later, for instance, you know,
right,
I could not have been in a position to interview so many people with such flair, if I can use that word.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is obviously a vibe going on there, you know, because
right.
I entered an industry, I came to the industry when a lot of these existing top actors were still in their beginning or middle stages of the career. So to build a rapport with them became much easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the biggest learning was, it happened much later, I believe, you know, where I kept asking myself, what is it that's driving me to do what I wanted to do?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the way I look, my work changed. I'm not just a journalist, or I'm not just reviewing a film.
Right.
I'm writing a catalog, if I can use that word, you know.
Yes.
I'm writing everything for the sake of reference for people much later.
20 years later.
Like
right.
One of the big problems that I face today is I don't know where to look if I have to read up about movies made in the 60s, for instance.
Correct.
Or 70s. Yeah, people have written books, but then there's not enough material to give you a diverse perspective about any film or any performance.
Or at least not so readily available. You probably
yeah.
have to go to libraries, sit
right.
through scripts and...
Exactly, yeah. So I think of myself as more of a historian, if you could say that.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm writing about the present so that the future will come back and refer to it. So, which is why I tend to write a lot more than what is expected out of a journalist. So in a newspaper, your word count is about 500 to 600 words. That's on the upper limit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stories are about 250, 300 words.
Right.
But I believe that some of my better work has been in stuff that are at least 1500 to 2000 words long.
Wow.
So the longer it is,
I feel more.
I'm expressing better. And the moment I convince myself that whatever I'm doing right now might not seem that important, but it is important when you look at how this might be a point of reference for people much later on.
Right.
So that's what keeps me going, man. And
wow.
and there are times where you know that your voice will help a certain film to reach out to a wider audience. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I can take a name of a film like Pelchupalu, for instance. Like,
right.
This was 2 years ago, or was it 3 years ago?
Pelchupalu was, I think, 2016-ish.
Huh, I don't know. So anyway, I saw the film a week before it released, and by then, the buzz about the film was not that huge, if
mm-hmm.
I can say that. So it was only in the limited circle that people came to know about it. They,
right.
they watched it, they were raving about it. I wrote a review of the film, and from that moment onwards, the momentum started building. So people
wow.
were almost threatening me, saying that, dude, you praise the film so much. If the film is not up to the mark, we're going to come and kill you. So I'm like, be my guest, but go watch the film at least. Yeah. So
yeah.
sometimes it does help, you know, your voice helps. And those are the days where
you feel
good about the
yeah.
kind of work you do. And some of the...
it gets validated.
Yeah. Sometimes your interviews go viral, and sometimes people really appreciate the kind of work you're doing, and you're like, okay, I think I did a good thing today, or I did a right thing today.
Mm-hmm.
There was an interview which I did of Trivikram Srinivas.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people hated me for talking to him in English,
right.
whereas he was talking to me in Telugu. But,
right.
but still, that content is there. You know, it's 45 minutes of Trivikram Srinivas talking about topics which probably he doesn't talk in interviews in
wow.
general. So
right.
very happy that some conversations like that have happened over the course of last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always looking for moments like those. You know? You're always waiting for films which make you feel happy, and you really want to write about those films. You know? And at some point it becomes a point of responsibility, you know. So you keep questioning
mm-hmm.
yourself, if not you, then who's going to do it? Or if you don't do justice to that film or that interview
mm-hmm,
at
mm-hmm.
that point of time, then you're losing that moment there, you know?
Absolutely.
And you don't want to miss those moments. So there are days where you hate yourself, where you hate the job you're doing, where you crip that the films are not great.
Mm-hmm.
But in a year, trust me, you will find those moments where
you feel blessed.
Are at the right place at the right time. So
wow.
Knowing that you are doing the right thing and having to wait for that right thing to happen, I think that's the key to keep going, you know.
So in the larger scheme of things, you feel all these small disappointments don't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, it's so funny because 2009, I interviewed Rajmouli sir.
Right.
And then I couldn't meet him when he shot Ega. I mm-hmm. interviewed somebody else around that time. But when he came to Bahubali, because I knew him from so long, I could interview him with, you know, a better perspective.
Right.
And thankfully, this time he didn't tell me that I had answered those questions.
You have experience, 10 years of experience.
10 years of experience. So you're asking questions which probably others have not asked. So
right.
That definitely helps, you know. So it's like going to the gym, right? I mean, you
absolutely.
Hate yourself for a lot of time for
it
being
pains.
There. It's just a pain in the ass.
Yeah, but absolutely.
But after a point, you know that you're losing weight, you're becoming fitter, so
you feel good about yourself.
Yeah,
and you indulge yourself looking into the mirror. So slowly, it takes a lot of patience and energy.
Absolutely, writing is a lot about that, man. Patience,
absolutely.
patience.
And even building a career around what you passionately love to do, right? These days, people are just into the rat race, like we were discussing before the interview. People want to either do engineering and then masters in the US or anywhere. There's nothing wrong in what they do. I'm not blaming them. But there's a set course that people always follow. There's very few people that I've actually seen. In fact, there's another interview that I did earlier by Aditi. She used exactly the words that you used. If not me, who else? She's a crime reporter for Times of India, right? And she said if she gets disappointed after seeing so much of crime, bodies, and when she comes back and she cries about it, she wants to quit, but then she feels exactly the one you said, if not me, then who else? And that keeps them going. And it's so beautiful to listen to people who follow their passion.
Let me just add some more things. So,
please, yes.
When I say if not me, who else? There are hundreds of reporters who I'm pretty sure are doing great work and sometimes better than me. The thing is, every person gets that small
mm-hmm.
window of opportunity
mm-hmm.
and you have to make the most of it.
Right.
You know, so that's where that whole attitude of if not me, then who else? Like, I'm given that opportunity at that point of time. So let me do the best I can.
Right.
That's the only approach there. And with regards to people who choose a more conventional career, like let's say corporate
engineering,
sector,
medicine. Yes.
I have huge respect for them.
Absolutely, yes.
And I'm sure everybody is doing what they're doing for a purpose.
Absolutely.
For me, the purpose is to be happy and to do stuff which makes me happy. At this moment of my life, films make me happy. You know, watching films makes me happy. Writing good stuff makes me happy.
Right.
Expressing what I felt about a certain film or anything, you know, when I put it in words and sometimes you think, oh, okay, so that came out really well.
Right.
That makes me happy. So it again goes back to what we call as pursuit of happiness. You know,
True.
For some people, it's the promise of a good life,
mm-hmm.
a lavish lifestyle, which is great. You know, for some people, it's that feeling content with what they're doing.
Yeah,
That's their biggest motive. For me, I guess it's a bit of everything, you know. So, I'll tell you another funny incident. Okay, so a lot of times my mother keeps asking me, "You just go watch movies and review them. What's the big deal about it?" And I've questioned myself. Okay, I mean, for a lot of people, watching a film is entertainment. You
yes.
know? I don't go to watch a film to enjoy. That's work for me, you know.
Right.
And
absolutely.
The other day, a close friend of mine was asking me, "So what do you do for enjoyment?" And I'm like, I still don't have an answer for that, you know.
But you enjoy your work.
That's different. I'm not relaxing there, you know. So that's what I mean. So
well, Yes.
Let's say you come home after a hard day's work, you want to relax, you'll go watch a movie, you'll read a book.
Right.
But for me, because I want to learn all the time, right? So reading a book is...
learning again.
It's part of learning. Watching a film is learning. Reading anything is learning. Watching anything is learning for me.
But that's good, right?
So what do you do to unwind, you know? So I think for me, silence is my... unwinding time. You know, a lot of times I just zone out. I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm just staring at the ceiling or staring in the garden. And I'm calm. I think that's where I sort of relax. Yeah, and my relaxation doesn't come with movies, because that's work for me.
True.
And I can't tell all this to my parents, because it just doesn't make sense to them, right? So I sometimes tell my mom especially that, you know, in a year, I might review 60 films.
Mm-hmm.
Out of 60 films, I'll be thrilled if I watch 10 great films.
Right.
That doesn't happen, so often. So sometimes you're just looking, it's just hope, right? Like this Friday, something good is going to happen. This Friday, something is going to happen. So
right.
Sometimes, I mean, not all Fridays are good. You know, sometimes you just crib the hell out of everything.
Like,
yeah?
Why did I watch this movie?
But you know for sure that the next Friday is going to be good. Or that's how you convince yourself and keep going.
Absolutely. So, in your career, you must have seen many, many ups and downs, right? What were they? Like, if you can point one, two ups and one, two downs that top your list of it. And if you could say, how did you deal with them? Those ups and downs.
Let me talk about downs first.
Please, yes.
I was working with this tabloid, Post Noon, and I don't have a background in journalism. I didn't go to a media school. I didn't go to a film school. I'd worked before at a smaller organization, but this was a proper tabloid. So, like, we had to bring out an edition every day.
Right.
Initially, I was too shy, man. Like, I couldn't call up people to ask them for quotes, or I would hesitate a lot, you know, what would they think if I text them at so-and-so hour, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, one day my editor calls me and he asks me, dude, what are you doing, you know? Are you even a journalist? Why are you wasting my time? And I just died of guilt, man. Like, I didn't want to let that guy down, but...
Right.
But how do I tell him that, like, sir, I don't know anything. I'm learning everything on the go. You know, so you have to be patient with me. You know,
people don't have that.
The problem is with, especially with media and entertainment career, is you're not given enough time to grow as a person or as a reporter. You know?
They
expect you to be on the field, on the go, right from the word go. And I mean, it's not their fault, because
that's
how the industry is. Where ideally, I should have gone to a media school to learn about all that.
Right.
My training happened on the field. So I've gone through a lot of those phases like that, where I didn't know what was the ideal way of doing something, which only comes through experience or through such repeated sessions with their editor or something like that. Sometimes, you know, it's newspaper industry is such a cutthroat industry, man. Like, if you miss a story, somebody else gets it, and you're asked, what were you doing? Why didn't you do that? Why didn't you get those stories?
Where were you?
And let's say there's a big sensation story which is about to break, and you have to verify whether it's true or not. So, which means that you have to reach out to people who might know.
Trusted sources.
And not everybody has those trusted sources, man. So you don't even know whom to call. So a lot of times you're like, dude, I can't do this. The problem with the media industry is no is not an answer. You have to get it done somehow. Otherwise, that story is going to get killed. I've had incidents like that where I couldn't break stories.
Mm-hmm.
And everything adds up, you know. I mean, because they might forget about it on that particular day. But such incidents keep recurring over the course of a longer duration. So how are you going to handle it the next time? You know,
right.
The pressure just keeps building up. And deadlines, man, like, I think they still haunt me. They still haunt my dreams. You would have promised somebody to deliver some work and...
Right.
And writing is a kind of work where...
You need a flow.
A lot of times people like working methodically. Like, they'll have a timetable or they know that they have to finish something in a certain time.
Right.
So they work backwards and finish it all. But for me, I have to get into that mood. I have to get into that zone where words start flowing smoothly. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of times I just overshoot deadlines. And I mean, the story might turn out to be good or not, but that's not the point. But at least sticking to the deadlines, you know, it's
correct.
Been my one of my big pains also. and what else? I mean, yeah, sometimes, especially with print, what happens is what people might say, the moment you put it in a headline,
mm-hmm.
it gives a very different meaning. You know, it could be interpreted in any way.
Many ways.
Yeah. So I've had incidents like that sometimes where people said, dude, this is not what we told you. How come you twisted everything like this? You journalists are all like this. You're just looking for gossip and con. I'm like, no, that's not my thing. I'm not that
I'm
kind of
a
guy, you know, right? So yeah, things like this, man, mostly.
Right.
Sometimes people might be pissed off that you didn't like a certain film and you thrashed the film. I've had one incident where fans of one particular actor came home to threaten me, saying that we've been reading a lot of your work and you're not supporting our hero at all.
Wow.
I'm like, are you serious? Did you even see that film? But it was scary that day, you know, when they came home and all that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's a minor incident.
Mm-hmm.
The patch-up was very, very easy and simple. And but that was the only time when I've been...
threatened.
Threaten is too big a word, but I came face to face with such that awkward situation, let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't really expect somebody to come knock at your door.
I know, that's scary for me. I would consider that scary.
And highs, yeah, I mean, I'm so blessed, you know, I have to tell you this, you know, Madhav. People have been so kind to me, you know,
mm-hmm.
right from my first job. Maybe it's the kind of person I am, you know, very
right.
soft-spoken and mild, very good-natured.
Yes.
I don't want to hurt anybody. I always wish the best for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go talk to people, that's the kind of person they're also seeing. You know? So who I am and whom I'm being perceived as has been the same more or less, you know.
That's a blessing. I would
yeah,
definitely say
and
yes.
A lot of people have been very, very supportive, very kind to me. So, so to reach to certain actors or directors,
mm-hmm.
obviously you have to have a lot of experience and you need to build those networks or they have to trust you to talk to you without any filters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To build that trust takes a lot of time. I'm sure everybody will acknowledge that. No?
Right.
So for me, I think a couple of conversations with a lot of people have really helped me get into that zone where they don't see me as a journalist, but somebody who can they can talk to, you know, without any inhibition, you know.
Right.
So that's been a huge blessing for me, you know, and that faith in me, I think faith that I will be honest no matter what, you know, sometimes what happens is, there are actors, actresses, directors whom I know pretty well,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen their films and I've messaged them, what bullshit is this, you know, like,
wow,
your film was utter crap and I hope good luck for your next film. But we continue to be friends, you know, we continue to talk and
right.
We message and, you know, so that's our sort of rapport is, it's hard to build, but I think people do it so easily for
mm-hmm.
a lot of people do it so easily. So for me also, it took me some time, but I am in that zone with some people at least whom I think I know well. And interviews, you know, I think that's when they get to know you better as a person.
Right.
Based on how you talk to them or what you ask them. So
how you make them feel.
Yeah, exactly. And they know that I don't have an agenda when I talk to them. You know?
Right.
I don't expect them to say a certain thing, you know. whatever they say, I write. I quote them verbatim. So there is always that trust factor that they're not going to be misquoted or
correct.
They're not going to be painted in a different light, you know. So that has helped me a lot. And people sometimes acknowledge you very publicly, you know. So this happens at press meets, you know, when mm-hmm. there's a Q&A session going on, and
right.
they'll always look out for a few people in the crowd, hoping that, okay, you are going to ask me this question. Mm-hmm. I know that you're going to ask me this question. So
ask me.
And it feels nice to be identified for the kind of work you do, and
absolutely.
They take you very seriously. I think that's a big thing for a journalist. No, your work is being taken seriously, so I think you're doing something right there.
That's like a certification of validation, right? If someone wants you to come and interview them,
let's not use such big words, but yeah, let me just say they're also looking forward to have a nice conversation, you know.
Yeah,
which is a clutter breaker, you know, because a lot of times they're so fed up with these cliched questions. There is a template for every interview, you know?
Right.
If you see anything on YouTube or TV,
mm-hmm.
you will know that they have a list of people whom these actors or directors are expected to address. Like, how did you feel working with them? How was he to work with? You know, music was great. A producer was nice. And so, I mean, that's fine, but you have to do little go beyond
more,
that. You know,
more.
So that's where you stand out. I think I've had some of those moments, so I think people know me for that. You know?
Yeah. Awesome. So I've seen your reviews, and you were just telling how you message your friends in the film industry, telling them your movie is crap. I saw one of the movie reviews, Names Not Required, and it feels you your exact words are, it someone has thrusted a tuning fork into your ear. After reading that, if I were the actor in it, I would get like not angry with you, probably I would get shattered. I mean, obviously people in the media industry, they live in the glass house, that's what they say, right? There's no privacy, there's nothing for, so. But still, they would give you interviews. Still, I understand there's a faith in it. How do they take it? How do they process it? Because success and failure is an everyday game for them because of the
yeah.
movies they made. How do they take reviews such as these, and how do they process it, and do they show it back to you in a nice way or a bad, in a unfriendly way rather?
It's complicated, let me put it that way, right? What happens is, I'll be very honest, see, reviews ultimately, they don't really matter much
mm-hmm.
beyond day one. If your film is great, no matter what rating so-and-so person has given, people will go watch it.
Right.
A good film with a good review, it will probably reach out to a bigger audience. But if you've made a film which is aimed at a certain audience
mm-hmm.
and if you're not part of that audience, it doesn't matter. The only way it could hamper your work is how people in US perceive it, you know, because it's a big market for us.
Correct.
And the moment they see a film has not got a 3 or less than 3, then they might not go pay those whatever $20-$30 or drive 3 hours to go watch a film. So
correct.
There it
yes.
might hamper a bit, but now I think people are too smart, man. Like, even before a review comes on online, they'll just go on Twitter, read everything
mm-hmm.
what others are saying, and you know, they'll go watch
right.
a film. With regards to a bad review, right? I don't know if you can quote any particular examples there, but there was this time where okay, so I've not faced a backlash from any actor
mm-hmm.
that I can think of
okay.
who said, dude, why did you write this review for me? You know, because my reviews are pretty long and I would explain why I didn't like a certain film.
Right.
Or and sometimes humor helps a lot, right? So
mm-hmm.
if I'm liking a film, it's very obvious in the review.
Right.
But if I hate a film, the way I write that review changes completely, you know. I'm writing about myself watching that film. I'm not talking about the film there. So sometimes it's like I'm blaming myself. Why am I going through such deep emotions while watching a bad film rather than commenting on how bad the film is.
Right.
Because it need not, no, I mean, there's no fun. Ultimately, the idea of writing a review for me is to have fun, you know.
Correct.
If the film doesn't entertain you, then you have to entertain yourselves.
That's a good way to look at.
You might think that I'm doing that at the expense of a film, and this is something which I don't really understand a lot of times. You know, fans get so upset sometimes. They say, dude, you're killing the industry with your bad reviews, bad ratings. You're causing so much loss to the distributors.
What?
You know, people are not going to watch a film because you gave it a bad rating.
He's a crorepati already, distributor. What does it make
like,
difference?
Dude, no, if my voice could make so much difference,
right.
What happened to all those other films which are rated, you know, gave a very good rating, but they still flopped at box office? You know, the argument is so stupid sometimes. You know? But for the longest time, there was this popular belief within the industry or the media circle that if I like a certain film, it's going to be a flop at box office. For about 6-7 years, there were multiple examples to prove that was true.
With you?
With me. With me specifically.
Right.
So, if they say that I say that I didn't like a certain film, they'd be like, okay, thank God, the film will be a huge hit. If I say that the film is amazing, beautiful, and all, it won't do well commercially. You know?
Wow.
But thankfully, that jinx has been broken multiple times, and I have a good track record right now.
Well, no, but, good luck following that.
Yeah, I mean, no pressure, man. Like, last 2 years have been so life-changing for me, you know, because I don't write for websites or media houses which can change the fate of a film.
Right.
Like, that's not the first go-to point for anybody to go read a review. There are other websites which cater to that market. So I would like to believe that people read my reviews because they like how I express myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is keeping me going, you know.
Right.
It's not to thrash a film. Why would anybody thrash a good film? There are films which leave you with mixed feelings, you know.
Correct.
Where you don't know whether you liked it a lot or you didn't like it so well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that also comes through in the writing. The problem is people don't read so much, you know. They'll only look at the rating, they'll read the last paragraph, end of story. But I'm pretty sure if they read the whole review, they'll totally understand why I felt a certain way and what is my point of view. A review is not what the film is. It's somebody's point of view, right? Like,
correct.
Your point of view could be very different. And
agreed.
We're all okay with it, you know? So, but there are different voices giving you different perspectives. So whichever you want to believe in, you know, you're the best judge for it.
Absolutely. So how, I mean, how to put it, initially in your years, like, it's been quite, it's a challenge to do this film critique. It's not very monetarily rewarding, right? And your family pressures. But I understand that there is some amount of passion that is pushing, there's validation that is pushing through. But how did you deal with the family pressures, your parents? Your parents must be comparing you with other kids who were doing monetarily very good. But so how did you manage and how did you fight back from the family but manage to do whatever you wanted to do?
Okay, I've been asked this question a lot of times by my parents about...
I'm a rookie interview. 10 years down the line, I'll do a better interview.
No. Thing was, a lot of my friends from college, right? Like, they most of them moved abroad.
Right.
And they worked in some of the best companies in the world, like Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody works at BCG. Somebody is in Schlumberger.
Yeah.
These are all very, very high-paying jobs, you know. Like, my first salary after I graduated from college was about 22,000 rupees. And around the same time, my friends who work in Bangalore and US, they were earning at least 5 or 6 times more than what I was making.
Yeah.
Like, this was their starting salary, imagine that.
Right.
So a lot of times my mom would ask me, what do you feel when you see all your friends making such big bucks? And I'm like, I'm so happy for them. They're making such good money. I mean, it's so simple, right? Because I don't have the ability or the intelligence to do the kind of work that they are doing. Similarly, I don't think they would relate to the kind of work I'm doing because it's so different from whatever they've studied.
Right.
Both of us are happy in our own spheres. We respect each other a lot. So there is nothing to be jealous about or nothing to make me want to leave my career to pursue something else just because that's...
money is less.
Yeah, money is better there or something like that. So for the first 3-4 years, it was a very tough task to convince my parents that what I'm doing is gonna pay off in some form in future. So they would keep asking me, are you going to move to a different job? Would you do an MBA, move abroad, or work in a bigger firm? Or if you're so passionate about writing, when to look at corporate companies, because you know, Corpcom pays you a lot better than what a newspaper or entertainment journalism would pay. And I completely agree with all that, you know, because this frustration of not seeing enough money will always be there.
Right.
And Hyderabad is not like Bombay or Bangalore where there is good money in the industry. You know?
Correct.
If you're starting at a certain level, you will be stuck at that level for a very long period of time until you move to a higher position and you don't even know when that promotion would take place.
Take place.
Or you have to switch to a different company on a higher pay scale. But then there are so few people in the system, especially in English media in Hyderabad, that getting a job in another company is not that easy because somebody has to leave the system for you to enter there.
Fill that space, yes.
So it's a matter of patience, man. I mean, you know that you this is the career path you have chosen and you have to stick to it. You know, sometimes things are not good. Sometimes you crib that the pay is not great, you know. But then again, if not this, then what would you do? And if you're doing something else, will that still be what you wanted to do? Or will that be completely different from everything that you've built over the past, whatever, you know, 5 years, 6 years? But financial pressure, I think it's one of the major factors why people don't even want to take up a journalism career, you know. The pay is not that great.
Right.
I completely agree with it. And if somebody says that that's the reason why they don't want to take up journalism, then I mean,
good,
they have a very
them.
Valid point, you know?
Good luck to them.
I'm sure they have good things to do, but there's a lot more that needs to be done here, you know?
Absolutely. And it's not everyone's cup of tea. I mean, it's preferences, right? You, for you, the passion was to write and enjoy the movies and enjoy the writing the review for that particular movie. For some, it is to make more money. And there's nothing wrong in making more money.
Absolutely.
There's
nothing
wrong in not wanting to make more money. Cool. It's people and people's expectations from you. It's how they, how the society has framed. Unless and until you have made good amount of money by this age, you have settled down, you've got married, you have kids, you have you've bought a nice car, you've bought a nice house. You're not settled. You're not doing well. They won't see the quality of work that you produce. They see the quantity of money that is there in your bank balance by showing off on the material things that you have, which is so ridiculous at many levels, but sadly that's how it goes, man.
If you have seen this film Aokati Adakku, this is a Rajendra Prasad
yes, of course, so it's one of our favorite movies all time.
Rajendra Prasad always uses this one dialogue: after 1 year
I'll be the king.
So it's a running joke in our family because I would have told my parents
after one year I'll be the king.
But I'll never tell them when is that 1 year is gonna come. So that's still coming.
Will do good. You're already doing great. I really wish you luck.
This is where I would use the word validation. You know, it plays such a major role. Because no matter how much your parents are upset about your career choice, but the day somebody or one of their friends tells them, oh, we have seen your kid's work or interview and he's really good, they feel very happy about it.
They do.
And they share those compliments with me, you know. And I mean, I know that that regret will always be there. Like, what if he had done something else, you know. But these are moments which I'm sure is making them feel very happy that
Absolutely.
He's also doing well. So let him do what he wants. You know?
Absolutely.
So after a point, they just get used to it, man. Like, you just have to push it to that extreme where they think that where they really believe that they have no other choice but to just keep quiet and let you do your work.
Wonderful, wonderful.
I'm sure that's true for a lot of entrepreneurs. So
it is true for a lot of critics and journalists as well.
Not just journalists, but let's say you have started up a company and your parents are very worried about you. But then after a point, they will compromise at some level and say that, okay, this is what he's really good at and he's trying to do something, so let him do it.
Let him do it.
They will come to that state. It's just a matter of time. For some people, it might be instant. For some people, it might take 10 years, 20 years. I don't know. But at some point, everybody will come.
Yes.
Everybody will come to terms with it.
But for that, you need to keep pursuing your passion.
Yeah,
you need
absolutely.
To show your parents that you like this. You are good at it. Right. You can't be fickle-minded and keep jumping. Oh, no, I'll try this for 6 months. Oh, it didn't work. Then your parents will lose trust in you as well. And then they will start pounding on you. Okay, when are you going to settle down, right?
Absolutely.
For God's sake, start doing something that makes sense. So, to follow up, what, if not film critique, what else? What would you prefer?
I think storytelling, yeah. So it comes in different forms, you know.
Right.
I've always fancied writing a book, writing a novel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there is a career in it. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of bestsellers. But in India, the definition of a bestseller is very sketchy. If your book sells about 5,000, 10,000 copies, then it's a bestseller.
Right.
But you don't see
great money
there, you know. It's only when it's like a massive blockbuster that you see royalties, you know. But I still think storytelling in the form of writing a book, maybe writing a script for a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I'm still in a very nascent stage in that thing. And
right.
I don't know if I would push myself in that direction anytime soon. But that's something which keeps playing on my mind. You know, maybe I should think, whatever happens, it has to be storytelling, films, writing. You know, my life will revolve around these 3-4 aspects.
Awesome.
I'm pretty sure of that. Like, there's nothing else that I want to do. Or even if I'm in a decision-making process or position, decision-making position, I would still make sure that it has to do something with films. There is no other area that
would
interests me so much, or which really I will not use the term that I'm good at something, because there's so much to learn.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I'm comfortable doing on a daily basis. You know, a lot of times, everybody wants to take a good photo. Yeah. So I want to learn photography, but that doesn't mean that I'll be a photographer, you know.
Tomorrow, yeah.
You know, it's a different art in itself.
You have
to invest so much time, energy, and you have to plan, like, see yourself be in a certain position. And that comes only when you know the industry that you work in, you know.
Right.
And it's very hard to switch after a certain time in your career, you know. You could give up everything once you turn 40, 45, maybe you have enough bank balance, which will give you a big cushion to do something else. But I don't think in the 30s people have that
cushion.
Freedom.
Freedom. No.
It's a big risk. You
know? It is.
So, big risk.
So what's next on your list?
Writing more. There is no end to it, right?
No, but writing what? Films, a book, a movie. Do you have any things sketched out, or is just going with the flow right now?
Definitely going with the flow, but
okay.
A book is definitely on the cards.
Wow.
You know, because there are certain stories, certain ideas, which I've been toying with for a very long time. And I think I've delayed the writing process by a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's high time that I actually sit down and write my story, you know, my journey, my thoughts.
Right.
I read a lot now, thanks to Kindle, you know. I'm reading everywhere. And,
right.
And a lot of times people have seen me in coffee shops being hunched and then staring at my Kindle. Or my laptop or my phone. And I'm constantly reading it. And I would like to channelize all that experience into something more constructive, you know. But the fun part about reading so much is it's such a beautiful icebreaker, you know.
I mean,
every conversation I can start up with, hey, you know what I just read, you know. And I quote a very interesting anecdote. I'm a big history buff. I love reading about travel stories and history and period fiction and you know, stuff like that, or books which have been made into films,
right?
About world wars and, you know, espionage and all that. There's so much interesting information out there, you know. So yeah, I just keep reading. I hope I keep reading.
And I hope you do wonders and grow further and further and keep pursuing your passion. Thank you so much, Hemant, for taking time out. It was just wonderful talking to you and catching up with you after ages.
I know,
mother. It's so difficult to catch up with you. Other than I'm going to take interview slots with you from next
time. Dude, you know where I hang out most of the time, so don't give me this excuse.
No, but I can't talk to you. You are hunched, as you just said, on your Kindle.
I'm reading, you know.
So, but no, jokes apart, thank you so much. And I wish you nothing but best.
It was an absolute pleasure talking to you, mother. Thank you so much for making me part of this.
Thank you.